His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, we will recap the Billboard Music Awards. Rage Against the Machine form another supergroup. Neil Young says okay to Donald Trump. Radiohead plays Creep, but in more serious news, last night, four people were shot at a TI concert in New York City at Irving Plaza. One man has died, another is in critical condition. The shooting happened inside the venue's third floor green room around 10:15 p.m. T.I. was in the building, but not on stage, and there is a cell phone video of people fleeing the floor once the gunshots are heard. Mm. We've both been to Irving Plaza, very small venue.
Yeah, very compact venue.
So well, because it was in the green room, do they frisk entertainers and their entourage?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. I don't know for sure. I mean, they certainly frisk people coming in. And there are metal detectors there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
is there, though? Do they want people at Irving Plaza? I don't know if they do.
I think they would. I think you walk through something.
I don't remember.
But I know there's security guards there, and I have been frisked. So, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, that story scares me because I've been to many shows at Irving Plaza, and it's so small and compact that any bullet flying around would, I mean, it's surprising that more people didn't get hurt.
Yeah,
The person in critical condition, we wish them the best.
Absolutely.
The Billboard Music Awards took place on Sunday night from Las Vegas, Nevada. Britney Spears performed a greatest hits medley. Kesha eventually did get to perform her version of Bob Dylan's It Ain't Me, Babe. Rihanna delivered a soulful rendition of Love on the Brain. Madonna, later with the help of Stevie Wonder, performed a tribute to Prince. And many of pop music's biggest names also performed, including Fifth Harmony, Justin Bieber, and Ariana Grande. What is the takeaway from the BBMAs?
And DNCE, please.
Oh my goodness! Well, both Jonas Brothers were there.
That's right, and they seem
and to be... their buddy Demi Lovato.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I could say, you know, I want my 3 hours back, but I guess that would be capricious. I mean, there's a couple things I thought. First of all, I thought the Kesha thing was genius.
Okay.
I mean, doing It Ain't Me, Babe, and I'm sure this went over everybody's head. But if you know the song. You know, like, what she's trying to say. And I thought that was great. And of course, Ben Folds is one of my favorite people in the world. So I was totally into that. I thought Rihanna did a great job. I really did. I mean, she proved, beyond all the stuff we hear about Rihanna, she proved, hey, I can sing. Mm-hmm. And I can do this properly. And what was great about it, if you go back and watch it, notice that she's so comfortable with singing the song that she can mess around with it. I mean, she was like messing around every verse. And that's the only way you can do that, as you know, Jim, the only way you can ever do that is if you're completely comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really good. The interesting thing for me, though, is further proof that rock and roll is dead. There's no rock, basically.
Well, interesting. I'm going to have you explain that, but when Rihanna was performing on stage, the first thing that came to mind was Janis Joplin.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'll give you that one. But essentially, rock music as a chart-topping genre.
Yeah, now watching the show, there's no rock and roll whatsoever.
Exactly. And I think that's reflective of the modern reality. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't rock out there. It doesn't mean that there isn't good rock out there, but in terms of the collective consciousness of the music consuming public, rock is no longer happening.
I mean, I have friends that work at labels, and they say if you plug in a guitar, then your song's not going to get played on the radio.
Right,
and it's been like that for years.
It has. But we're sort of. I mean, I think a show like that, like the Billboard Music Awards. Really demonstrates how complete that is. The complete takeover of pop. Now, pop has always been there. I mean, go back and look at any chart from any period, and you'll see pop. But, you know, between pop and rap and hip-hop and R&B, that's the dominant force, period. And it's going to be very difficult for anybody to really work their way into the top echelons of the chart playing rock, plugging mm-hmm. a guitar, yeah.
Although one of the Go-Go's did perform, which I thought was cool, but DNCE, a Jonas brother, supplied the rock for the evening.
Yes.
Because it's Joe Jonas on guitar. He had, was he on guitar? I don't know if he was. Maybe he was just running around with the mic.
He has
a guitarist.
He just ran
guitar,
around
bass, and drums.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure there was enhancement within the performance, but it sounded good.
It sounded pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like if you do a video and you put people in gorilla suits or you put children in it, you know, on a playground, it works. I mean, it's the fallback position. So if you're DNCE and you have him running around the audience and singing, it's going to work. I mean,
a couple more thoughts on the Billboard Music Awards before we talk about the Rage Against the Machine supergroup. I cannot stand when artists go through the crowd. It's been done so many times on award shows, and they don't realize that if you're not in the front row and you're not watching on TV, then you don't see anything.
It's true. Yeah, that's true.
So you just see this band on stage, and you're like, well, who's singing? And I think I counted, and there's probably more, I counted 3 people going into the audience in the matter of 40 minutes.
Well,
and
like
at some
I say,
point, I'm like, no, man, if one person can do it. One person can do it tonight, but that's it.
Yeah, but it's the automatic get applause.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's like saying, hey, you guys, do you know it's our guitar player's birthday today? You know, I mean, or you call out the venue, or you call out the location, you call out the city. It's a tried and true performing technique.
And in the age of the selfie, it's probably great promotion.
Because
how many people were getting close-up pictures of Meghan Trainor or Joe Jonas as they walked past?
Absolutely.
I was okay with the Prince tribute.
Yeah,
Madonna and Stevie Wonder.
I found some of the reaction that I read online to be really, again, just sort of asinine. I mean, mm-hmm. what do you really want? You know, Madonna was a peer of Prince's. I mean, she knew him.
I believe they dated.
Yeah, she did the best she could, and maybe her best isn't that great, but she did the best she could. I don't have a problem with it.
My only problem with it is that, as we've said before, Prince never played hits on TV, so maybe Madonna should have done a deep album cut.
Well, yeah. I hate to say this, but I also wonder how many people actually knew that was Stevie Wonder and who Stevie Wonder is. Yeah, I mean, I think that if you did a little, you know, a little poll there, it would have fallen pretty flat.
But BBMAs were trending all night. Amazing, considering that there was a hockey game on, my Pittsburgh Penguins, basketball game on, and Game of Thrones was on simultaneously.
Ooh.
And I kept checking Twitter, and the Billboard Music Awards was, every time I checked, was number one trending on Twitter.
Oh, that's good.
So their social media people probably got a nice pat on the back.
Absolutely.
Last week, via a tweet, Rage Against the Machine fans were directed towards the website prophetsofrage.com, where an image read, "Clear the way for the Prophets of Rage. The party's over. Summer 2016. There's also a countdown clock, and I think it runs out on May 31st. Maybe it's June 1st. I'm not too good with countdown clocks. We've since figured out that Tom Morello, Brad Wilk, and Tim C from Rage Against the Machine are forming another super group.
Ooh.
Not with Chris Cornell, but with Public Enemy's Chuck D and Cypress Hill's Be Real.
Ooh.
Does this excite you?
I think it's pretty exciting. I think it's probably, and I'm going to borrow somebody else's joke here, but it's kind of a countdown clock to Who Cares?
See,
I mean, I think it's great. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not so sure that many people out there are really going to care that much about this.
So I was excited because I thought it was a Rage Against the Machine reunion.
Right.
And they were going to put out a new album. And then when I found out it was Chuck D and Be Real, I said, oh, that's it?
Well, Zach's really fallen off the face of the earth, hasn't he?
I think, I don't want to say this, but I think it's true. I think Zach De La Roca is the new Axl Rose.
Yeah.
And his solo album is the new Chinese Democracy.
I agree.
And I've talked to people that have worked with him on his solo album that was supposed to come out years ago.
Years ago.
And
years
I read an interview years ago. I read an interview with DJ Shadow, and everyone's just like, because I think he's such a perfectionist, and he doesn't want it to sound like a Rage Against the Machine project that he won't put it out.
Right. No, when I first heard about it, again, years ago, it was going to have like sort of a electronic angle to it and whatever, and then I sort of lost track of what that was all about, and then I basically kind of gave up because it never came out.
What was... He had his... It was like an EP he put out. I think it was like 1 Year as a Lion or something like that. Mm. It was great. It was stripped down. And I thought, well, why did he put this out? This is great. And then we were promised an album. And then the album never came out.
Right.
I'm not super excited because I've seen Public Enemy in the last handful of years. They play with a live rock band. Cypress Hill plays with a live rock band. So now they're going to play with one of the greatest live rock bands of all time. But... it's an election year. We need Rage Against the Machine.
Exactly. But I also find it funny that they say the party's over. Well, really? I mean, you're not going to have one? I thought you were going to have a party. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. So what? Maybe they'll surprise us. We shall see on May 31st or June 1st. Last week, founding Beastie Boys guitarist John Barry died in hospice care after suffering from frontal lobe dementia. He was 52 years old. Mm-hmm. The Beastie Boys played their first show at his NYC loft and did many of their early recordings there.
Did you ever meet him?
I never met John Barry. I do a Beastie Boys podcast, and this year... I think it was this year, or at the end of last year, I interviewed Jeremy Shatton, who played bass in the Young Aborigines, and that was John Barry's first group. And then a few months ago, I interviewed Kate Schellenbach, who played drums in the Young Aborigines and the Beastie Boys with John Barry. So I got a nice picture of John Barry by talking to those two.
Right, and he'd been suffering for a while, right?
I mean, I would imagine being in hospice care.
Right.
And he was just one of those, he was like the fifth Beatle, like Pete Best.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a trivia question, like, John Barry, he was one of the first Beastie Boys.
Yeah, it's funny, I always wonder if I ever met him. I mean, it's quite possible I did at some point, but I don't remember it, so.
Yeah, he was one of those magnetic personalities in high school where you just want to follow. He kind of had that Pied Piper vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started a band, and then everyone would go to his loft to party, and they would practice there. They would have shows there. They would record there. And then when the Beastie Boys got more serious, you know, when they had an itinerary where we're going to play this show, and this show, and we need to practice, he would show up late to practice. I heard he also had a drinking problem. Oh. And that's when he kind of got phased out, and they brought in Ad Rock.
Right.
And then... yeah, and then the Beastie Boys became
the Beastie Boys.
Yeah. So we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about David Crosby, Neil Young, and Donald Trump. Alrighty, Jim Scheer with Lyle Presler. Here's a little story about Neil Young, Donald Trump, and David Crosby. So last year, it all began. Donald Trump's people were sent a cease and desist by Neil Young's people after Trump used Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World as a campaign song. Mm. Trump's people said they paid both ASCAP and BMI for the rights, but would stop using it out of respect for Young. So yesterday, Young, who is a Bernie Sanders supporter, we should also point out Neil Young is Canadian, said Trump could use the song, saying, once the music goes out, everybody can use it for anything. And then a fan asked former bandmate David Crosby about the situation, and he said, everybody makes mistakes sometimes. There's one.
I love that. That's great. That, I mean, you couldn't, I could sit down and try to write that for like a day and a half, and I couldn't come up with that.
So what do you think happened? Did Neil Young say, oh, I can't do anything because they did pay ASCAP and BMI for the rights?
Well, I mean, there's really nothing you can do. Unless the person, the politician, uses your song in such a way that sheds, like, you know, that makes it look negative or uses it in conjunction with something. Like, they can't put together a campaign ad and use the song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an illegal appropriation of the song. But in terms of playing it at a rally, there's really not much you can do about it. As long as they're paying the performance royalties on it, it's kind of not much you can do. I think that probably at some point Neil just thought, I'm not going to get involved in this. I'm just going to let it go.
Why did he say anything, though?
I know, that's the thing. Why say anything? Just let it go. Just forget about it. I mean,
unless so many people were asking him, like, dude, he's playing this, because I don't even know if he is playing the song again.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, yeah, so. I haven't been to a Trump rally in months. I mean, never.
So a few weeks ago, you, Lyle, beautifully broke down the Led Zeppelin versus Spirit Stairway to Heaven copyright trial. And there was another blurb this week. Spirit's lawyers have been accused by Led Zeppelin of tainting the pool of jurors at next month's Stairway to Heaven copyright trial when they said that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant would not appear in court. Led Zeppelin's legal team said it was a PR stunt and that Page and Plant plan to appear in court.
I'm trying to understand. So you're tainting the jury pool by the potential jurors by saying, oh, these guys think so little of this, they're not even going to show up. I guess that's the idea, yeah. Well, the lawyer for Randy California's estate has had a few issues as a lawyer over the years, from what I understand. And so he's not exactly, well, I don't know. Is he a member in good standing of the Pennsylvania Bar? I have no idea. But so this is just a PR war. I mean, this is, you know, We're gonna fight it out in the press and then see if we can do something in court.
I'd have liked to have a video of that, though. Well, you know, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, they're not even going to be here. I mean, if you guys are expecting them to be here, if you want an autograph, they're not even coming, man.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, and it also is somewhat predicated on the idea of, like, you want to be a juror because you want to be in the room with those guys. They're so cool. You get an autograph and stuff, even.
We should do a show out front of the courtroom steps.
I like it.
When that goes down.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a little road trip. So this story I found kind of bizarre. On Tuesday night at Yankee Stadium, a remix of Fat Joe's On the Way Up played featuring Jay-Z. In his cameo, he rhymes, you know you made it when the fact your marriage made it is worth millions. Lemonade is a popular drink and still is. He also raps, we never gonna let the elevator take him down. A reference to his, Beyonce, and Solange's infamous elevator video. So what's more surreal here? Jay-Z referencing Lemonade and the elevator video, or a remix being premiered at a baseball game? Seems like we would do that at a basketball game.
Yeah, a basketball game. Yeah, or a
football game. Or on Hot 97, like a radio show on Hot 97, but we do it at a baseball game.
Yeah, that's a bit odd. I mean, it is Yankee Stadium. You know, they are going to put a plaque out there in Memorial Park for Jay-Z with a big glass of lemonade sitting there. No, Jim, you know my feeling on this, man. I think I have a deep, deep suspicion that this is all just a bunch of marketing garbage.
They're playing us.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're playing and they're laughing. I think they're laughing and they're playing. They're sitting there somewhere. They're sitting there with their minions and they're laughing at us.
But you know who's not laughing? God. I'll tell you why. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton declared Monday, May 23rd, Beyonce Day, the same day she performed at TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. But if life hasn't already given Beyonce enough lemons, before the show started, lightning, yes, an act of God, lightning forced the evacuation of 35,000 fans. The show did go on. After the lightning passed, concertgoers were allowed back in the stadium as the Formation World Tour got underway at 9:30 p.m., which is late for Beyonce standards, but it would be very early for a Guns N' Roses fan. And earlier this month, a Beyonce concert was stopped in Raleigh, North Carolina, due to lightning as well. So does God hate Beyonce, or should artists not perform stadium shows during the rain season?
You know, lightning's no joke, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, it's if you actually do a little bit of research into lightning, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can really get. I mean, not only can you get really screwed up, but there's things that you need to do in the event of lightning storms. I don't know, does God? But you know, they say, Jim, I've been told that God works in mysterious ways. So I don't know that God's not in on the whole damn thing and that God's going, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to help you guys out with this lemonade thing. And, you know, now what would be really interesting would be if there was some sort of lemon blight. Okay. A lemonade shortage. That would be, now we really know that God was on her side.
Yeah, but hopefully, I mean, the rain season is letting up. We're getting into summer, so hopefully there'll be no more lightning cancellations on the Formation World Tour.
We can only hope.
So, what do they say? Lightning doesn't strike twice? Is that more common than Radiohead playing Creep? Because on Monday, in Paris, for the first time in 7 long years, Radiohead performed Creep live.
Whoa.
Were they listening to our Radiohead Bitch Out episode where we encouraged them to play more fan-friendly songs?
Of course they were. And Ed O'Brien's going like, yeah, that dude's right. That dude's right. I don't know who that dude is, but he's right.
He's like, Tom, you've got to listen to this podcast. You've got to listen to it. So I also want to point out that they played No Surprises the first time they played that OK Computer song in 7 years. They played Paranoid Android, and they also played My Iron Lung. But those were the only songs they played from OK Computer or The Bends.
Gotcha.
So we've still got some work to do on Radiohead.
Well, yeah, but it's you know, it's the thing that's great is that if you have that many good songs just sitting in your back pocket, and you can mm-hmm. figure out when you want to pull them out and play them, that's, I mean, what a luxury that is. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any birthdays today?
There are a lot of birthdays today, actually.
Ooh, yeah. And this week, we should also point out that Bob Dylan turned 75 years old.
He did. Paul Weller of The Jam actually turned 58, I believe, yesterday. And
okay.
Klaus Meine from The Scorpions, Rock You Like a Hurricane, turned. He's 68, and keep on going, Klaus. I love you. Mm-hmm. Stevie Nicks is also 68 from Fleetwood Mac.
Okay.
A wonderful woman. Lenny Kravitz is 52. Lauryn Hill of the Fugees fame is 41. Mm. Mr. Hank Williams Jr., Bocephus, is 67. I love that, Bocephus. I don't get it. I don't get it. And you know what? I haven't even done any research because I don't want to get it. I just like it, Bocephus.
Okay.
I just like that. Trevor Keith, who's the singer of Face to Face, is 47. Isaac Slade from The Fray. I believe you know him.
I do.
He's 35. Wow. David Torn, who is a tremendous guitar player and has done a lot of soundtrack work and is actually, I believe, the cousin of the actor Rip Torn.
Okay.
He's 63. Johnny Wilkerson from Wilkersham. Sorry. Oh, Johnny, I messed you up. Johnny Wilkersham from Social Distortion is 48 years old today.
Nice. Lauryn Hill, 41.
41. I don't know. I mean, it's always interesting to look at the birthdays because I'm always off. Like, I always think either people are older or younger than they actually are.
I always knew Lauryn Hill was around my age, but for the last handful of years, she feels older than me.
Right.
But she's actually younger than me.
She's actually younger. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the at the 68-year-olds and the 67-year-olds, and it's interesting. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, they're getting up there, but they've actually survived the 50s. Mm-hmm. You know, the 50s is traditionally a place where a lot of people unfortunately drop dead.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that as a 50 person. So
knock on wood.
I don't want that to happen. But I remember my father, once he turned 50, all of his friends dropped dead.
Okay.
So depressing.
Well, let's do some CrossFit together.
Okay. Let's do some CrossFit. Or maybe we should go for one of those spin classes. We're here.
Oh, every week I email you my favorite line of yours in our show. And I want to revise mine. Last week, I think I said up and up and up and up. But your nature narration was actually my favorite line of the show. I don't know where you pulled that from, but that was genius.
Well, thank you, Jim.
You were like,
thank you, Jim.
As the butterfly in the brush, or I forget what you said, but it was great. So the number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week is One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. Number one album on the Billboard 200, Views from Drake. Number one song on iTunes, Can't Stop the Feeling from Justin Timberlake. The number one album on iTunes, If I'm Honest from Blake Shelton. And the number one song on Spotify, One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. Coming up next is our music picks of the week, and I promise you, this is one that you do not want to miss.
When you were here before, couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You float like a in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special. But I'm a creep.
Oh my.
All right, we are back from that short timeout. Time for our music picks of the week. Usually we just kind of spring them on each other, but I actually know your pick of the week, Lyle, and I'm excited. And you even used some nice adjectives in an email to me earlier. So I'm going to go first. Mine isn't as provocative, shall we say, as yours. Mine is called Skipping from the English band Eagles. Maybe that's a play on Eagles. And to me, here's what I feel when I hear this song. You know, whenever there would be concerts at the Izod Center or any, or that whatever the arena was called in East Rutherford, New Jersey, I would never make the first song at that arena show because it just took so long to get out there.
Right.
So this song right here reminds me of a song as you walk towards the seat. You know, you go through that little alley before you pop out into the arena. The arena is still kind of cool because everyone's not bouncing around yet and the body heat hasn't made it hot. And it's just kind of like a nice second or third song of the set that gets everyone ready for the hit songs that will happen later.
Okay.
The Eagles, I don't think, play arenas, so I don't know if this whole scenario can play out in 2016. But say if there were a band like The Cure, you know, 10, 20 years ago, it would have played out, and I think the song would have sounded something like this. So here is Skipping from Eagles.
Each night like the needle slipped. Does existence have some more than this? You see life like a broken record player. We'll be right back.
you go.
I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
It's not a hit. It's not a hit.
No, no, no. But that's okay. And I think your description, I could almost smell it. You know? No, seriously. I'm being honest.
I
that was a great description. You're sort of winding your way through the side parts of the arena, and then you suddenly come out and you get that first glimpse of the stage and everybody
yes.
there. Yeah.
And you know when you first pop out of the tunnel, you can feel the air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is nice. And then by the end of the set, everyone's bouncing around and it's no longer cool in the arena.
No, it's disgusting.
And then if it's a Madonna show, there's never any air conditioning in the arena. She doesn't allow it.
That's right.
It's bad for her voice.
Neither does Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
I went to an Aretha Franklin show where I thought I was going to die. I was dripping with sweat. And it wasn't because I was dancing or anything.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, because the one Madonna concert I saw was in the middle of summer, and everyone was saying, "Well, what's going to happen? How are we going to do this?" So I think they probably just crank up the AC before she comes in the building, and then as soon as they have to turn it off, then they turn it off.
Well, and then you also know that the opposite was always true for Letterman. He had it so cold in there that I had an artist one time who she was really worried because she was a singer, and she couldn't get her vocal cords warmed up. It was driving her crazy because it was like 40 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember because I worked for many years in Times Square, and sometimes you would pass the Letterman people, and they say, oh, do you want tickets for tonight's show? And the one time I said, yeah, you know what? I do want tickets for tonight's show. And it was in the middle of summer. I had no sleeves, and then I said, it's cold in here. And I was just shivering the entire time.
Yep.
So, Lyle, the floor is yours.
All right, so my pick of the week is a song from Iggy and the Stooges, or the Stooges. It's called Search and Destroy.
A classic.
It's a classic. It was on their 1973 album, Raw Power, mm-hmm. one of the touchstones for any rock and roller and for punk rockers as well, because it kind of, I think in some ways that record signaled the end of the peace and love, you know, positive vibe generation of rock and rollers, and ushered in a new era, which would then, you know, move through the English punk bands, the Ramones, the rest of them, and it created an entirely new vibe. You may know that the actual original record was mixed by David Bowie, who was a good friend of Iggy Pop's. And later on, there was a remix done of the entire record, including Search and Destroy, which was done by Bruce More Cowbell Dickinson. I'm just like you. I put my pants on one leg at a time. Then I go out and make hit records. So why don't we do this, Jim? Why don't you play it, and then
okay.
I'll talk about the rest of it.
I'm a street-walking cheater with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb. I am a world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys. Somebody gotta help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, that ain't for me. Ow! Look out, honey, cause I'm using technology. Ain't got time to make no apology. So radiation in the dead of night, love in the middle of a firefight. Wanna die to strike you red. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, better take my mind. And I'm the world's forgotten boy, the one who's searching to destroy. And honey, I'm the world's forgotten boy, the one who's searching to destroy.
All right, Search and Destroy, Iggy and the Stooges, Raw Power.
Yeah, and apparently, if you don't know, Search and Destroy was a term that was used in the Vietnam War for certain types of special forces missions. And Iggy read the line or the name somewhere and then created a whole song about it. And to me, this is just a balls to the wall, punkish rock anthem. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Which makes it all the more ridiculous and demoralizing that Iggy or some combination of Iggy and the Stooges or somebody has decided to license it to Audi for their new Audi A4. Now, I'm a car guy, Jim, as you know. I'm also a well-known Audi hater. And this may have some influence on me. And it's not it's not that I don't like the cars, and the cars are fine. They used to be the poor man's BMW, the poor man's Mercedes. But now they're really good cars. The only thing is that every time anybody does something ridiculous to me on the road, they have an Audi. Every single time. I mean, it's without any fail. I'll be like, oh, there it is. Here's one coming. But beyond that, and again, that may have some influence on me. Now let's remember that Iggy Pop also was in a commercial with John Varvatos, whatever his mm-hmm. name is, for the Chrysler 300 car that bore the designer's name, and that was asinine, in addition to being a bad car. But so Iggy's no stranger to this stuff, but I have to say that I just find it absolutely disgusting that this song is being used in this context. And what makes it worse, and you told me you actually saw the commercial this morning.
This is the fourth time that I've heard this song today.
Right, okay, great. Yeah, so it's obviously...
It's on heavy rotation if you watch SportsCenter.
So it's working. but the moniker, the tagline for Audi now is, "Intelligence is the new rock and roll." And it's buttressed by a bunch of visuals featuring people, you know, writing code and, yep. you know, and walking through airports rapidly and then doing TED speeches and all of the things that I can't fucking stand. But I think that this is, it viscerally hits me. Now, Henry Rollins actually has a tattoo on his back of Search and Destroy.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And I got to say, Mr. Rollins, wherever you are, I'm sure this is a depressing day for you as it is for me. I just, you know, I mean, and Jim, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and I don't have, look, I'm not qualified, nor would I ever be qualified to tell people what they should or should not do with their music. It's entirely up to you. And if you have a property, a piece of music that you think is going to be valuable, and I'm sure you got paid decent money for this, it's up to you. But I would urge those people out there, including Mr. Pete Townsend, to simply think about it for a second and think, how much money do I really need? And can't I maintain the integrity of some of my work and not give it to a car company who are simply in the business of selling a car, which they hope you'll drive for 2 years and then trade it in on another car that they're going to mm-hmm. sell you. And next time it'll be not intelligence is the new rock and roll. It'll be like, you know, going to the bathroom is the new rock and roll. I mean, but I think this also plays into something we were discussing earlier about Billboard and the lack of rock music. And I think that, and I'm going to do a plug for a book by Jim Kardashian. And a Kardashian. I'm thinking Kardashians. This is how bad my life has become. Jim Carducci, who wrote a book called Rock and the Pop Narcotic. And you should, it's worth a read. It's an interesting book. He writes a lot about SST Records and Black Flag, but he also tries, not always successfully, but he tries to distinguish rock and roll from pop. Mm-hmm. And those lines are blurred a lot, but there's a different. And so he suggests, his basic thesis is that rock and roll is a pure form, pop is a sort of a narcotic. But what I would say is that now, because of people like Iggy Pop, rock and roll is the narcotic.
Mm.
And rock and roll is being used to sell all of this stuff that it had nothing to do with. There's no connection whatsoever between any of it. At least with mm-hmm. the Chrysler ad, there was this Detroit connection.
Right.
Okay? Yep. Even though Chrysler's owned by Fiat, so whatever. But it seems to me that we've now, you know, we've cross the Rubicon or whatever it is, you know, like it, we're now into rock is not distinguished from the pop narcotic. Rock is the pop narcotic. And so, we can only hope that Rage Against the Machine can come back out and do something about that.
Yeah. The Prophets of Rage.
The Prophets of Rage, the countdown clock.
So now could it be that whoever licensed it, maybe Iggy said, yeah, yeah, do it. Maybe they think everything happens so quickly these days that 2 years from now, we won't remember that Search and Destroy was in an Audi commercial.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think we will. I mean,
so it's like, we're outraged now, but 2 years from now, yeah, man, Search and Destroy, that's like a great punk song from the early 70s. It's so raw, and man, it.
Oh, so no, maybe we forget. I totally agree with you. I think that the problem is this is part of the dumbing down, if you will. Like, the first time we heard this stuff, we kind of went, oh, my God. I mean, it practically destroyed the career of the Del Fuegos when they licensed the song to Miller or whatever it was, the beer company. And then from that point, we got dumbed down to now where I guess a lot of people are probably listening to me and going, what's the big deal?
Now, wasn't Search and Destroy also in a Nike commercial?
It was in a Summer Olympics commercial that involved Nike back in like the early 90s. Okay. So, yeah, you're blunting my rant. You're blunting my rant, Jim. You are trying to undermine me. Yes, you're right. You are correct, sir, that it was
so
used
maybe
before.
It's maybe every 10 to 15 years we gotta, they decide to use Search and Destroy in a commercial.
It could be. I don't know. I mean, again, like it would make me happier to know that people said, "No, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to take this song, which is a signature, which has a certain kind of meaning." And we go back to the same old thing about the meaning. I mean, the lyrics to that song, does Audi really want that? Is that really the message they're sending to their consumer base? I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. But it sounds like some 20-something ad guy got excited and said, "Oh, yeah, we can do this." You know, it would just make me happier if people wouldn't do this stuff. But then again, you know, wait for the Minor Threat Nabisco commercial coming soon. I'm trying to think of what it would be. You know, oh, you have a kid screaming at a wall. If only you give him a biscuit.
Screaming at a wall would work well in a Kool-Aid commercial. Because have you seen those progressive
right, where he
commercials
jumps
with
the
Kool-Aid man? Yeah, he breaks through the wall.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Call up Madison Avenue. Let's go.
Run it by the guys.
I will.
So those were our picks of the week. When we come back, it is time to play Ask Lyle.
This is what I got. Once again, this is for me. Not for Duncan. Not for Cadence. I mean, I'll let them play with it. I'm not a bad mom. I'm not a jerk, but... In all honesty, at the end of the day, it doesn't go in their toy box. It goes in my room. So, here we go. I gotta take off my glasses for it. naturally. Okay, here we go. So, yes! Now watch when my mouth actually moves. That's not me making that noise, it's the mask!
Hey there, everybody. Jim Shear with Lyle Presler giving you the music news of the week. And now it is time to play Ask Lyle.
Ask Lyle.
So my first question, Lyle, what do you think of the quote-unquote original Misfits reunion? The Misfits will be playing Riot Fest in both Denver and Chicago later this year.
Well, you know, I have a long history with them.
I know
long
you do.
Long and
that's
and
why I asked.
Varied history with them. Just for the benefit of those out there listening, I actually was in a planned punk rock supergroup with Glenn Danzig that lasted about 15 minutes. And then I was in the band Samhain, which came after the Misfits, for about 15 minutes. And then I've had sort of a more or less antagonistic relationship with Glenn over the years, largely because Glenn seems to shoot his mouth off when he shouldn't. But And I also was the executive producer of the Misfits box set, the Coffin Ooh. Box. Along with a wonderfully talented man named Tom Begrowitz, who really was the producer of the whole thing. So I'm intimately involved and aware of the Misfits, and I have to say, despite my antagonistic relationship with Glenn, I have always loved Glenn's singing and always felt that it was ridiculous that that band didn't continue to perform, particularly given the fact that the Misfits themselves, the other guys, were doing their own thing with other mm-hmm. singers and things. And it just, it always seemed incredible to me that they couldn't somehow get it together. But there was so much hatred in that band. I mean, if you sat in a room with Doyle and Jerry Only and listened to them talk about Glenn, it was as if, you know, we're talking about Hitler. And if you, on conversely, if you talked to Glenn about them, how much time you got to sit here and listen to the vitriol? So I'm, in a way, I'm kind of pleased that they've somehow put that aside, probably because they want some money. But and that's fine. But I think that if it's going to be as good as I think it could be, it'll be mm-hmm. great. It'll be great. Because Glenn, okay. Glenn really is, I mean, Glenn is a fantastic singer and performer. And, you know, when he does his, you know, sort of Sinatra, Dean Martin, like, you know, punk rock thing, it's just fantastic. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful it'll be good. And I'm hoping that they're not going to kill each other. Okay. Which, I mean, I have no idea. Maybe they've completely buried the hatchet. So, good luck.
So, when bands that hate each other get together, do they hang out, or do they just have an unset agreement where we're going to play and then we're going to go separate ways?
Well, ask Stuart Copeland. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine, like, the Police piling into a bus together.
Yeah.
No, I would say that probably, in most cases, where you at least have the financial wherewithal, you probably keep your own separate, you know, separate arrangements. But I, yeah, but I,
at
but
this
I don't
point
know.
In time, yeah, at this point in time, you don't have to write new music.
Right.
You don't have to go into the recording studio. You basically just have to cohabitate for an hour and a half each night.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I would say about the Misfits was, you know, as much as I loved them, I have to I remember that I went to a show one time, which was the first time I ever saw them. And it was so horrible that you couldn't figure out what song was being played until they got to the chorus. And I knew all of these songs. It would be like, I got so no sex, you know, and then you'd sort of get, and but what is true now is that after this many years, they actually are better musicians.
Okay.
So they will be able to back up Glenn in a way that he might be more accustomed to from his days in Danzig. Where,
okay.
where those folks were really good musicians, and so they were able to really give Glenn the backing that he needed. And I think probably at this point, Jerry and the guys are probably good enough to back him up. So it'll be good.
Maybe this opens the door for a Sam Hain reunion.
Oh, I hope
somewhere
not.
Down the line.
Yeah.
So my next question, have you seen the viral video Chewbacca Mom? If so, what do you think about it?
I haven't seen it.
And if you haven't seen it, I have another question attached to that. So this got really big over the weekend. A lady went to Kohl's, and it's a mom in Texas, and she bought herself a Chewbacca mask. So
okay.
she stops the car, she takes out her cell phone, and she gleefully says how she's not going to give it to her son. She puts on the Chewbacca mask, and when she opens her mouth, the Chewbacca mask actually opens its mouth and makes the Chewbacca... And she hysterically laughs. And this mask brings her so much joy. And throughout the week, I think it has, I don't know the last count, but the last I read it was over 130 million views on Facebook. So she was then invited on the James Corden show.
Of course.
Where she got in the car, and they were both wearing Chewbacca masks. And then in the back seat was J.J. Abrams, who directed the latest Star Wars movie. And they're all laughing, wearing the Chewbacca mask. So if you didn't see it, my next question is, what are your thoughts on instant celebrity like this?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we Americans have essentially created the concept of celebrity. One of our contributions to the world, good or bad, is the concept of celebrity and basically the notion of being famous for being famous. And and there was a wonderful PBS documentary done years ago about celebrity. And it was really interesting because one of the first celebrities was General Eisenhower, the first modern celebrities. He was a big celebrity. And I think the comment in the narration was, Eisenhower proved that not only did the Americans have better soldiers, they had better Germans, which I just thought was a great line. But it's a process that we've sort of, as you point out from talking to people, we've refined it. So you begin to ask the question whether or not this stuff is actually organic or whether it's completely contrived. And I tend to prefer it when it's organic, but I'm no longer able to tell whether it is or not. And by the way, when I do the research for the birthdays, if you go to the famousbirthdays.com or whatever it is, the front page, most of the people listed are YouTube stars who I've never heard of.
Right.
And, you know, so-and-so's 18, so-and-so's 14, so-and-so's 22, so-and-so. You know, and I sit there and I go, wow, this has really been happening out there in the world, and I really haven't noticed it that much. And, of course, the king and the queen of all of it is Kim Kardashian. And she's figured out how to monetize this to a point where it almost behooves the average person to try to become a star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually hate stuff like this, but her laugh was so genuine.
Right.
Where I bought in, I said, okay, I'm with you. And then when I saw her on TV with James Corden and J.J. Abrams, and she was just so natural,
well,
I thought, okay,
yeah.
I'm with you. I'm with you on this. I remember I met with an agent last year, and they were talking about how they could get me more followers on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. And they said, did you ever hear of the Target kid? And I said, no. And they said, yeah, there was a kid at Target, and he's really good looking, and his picture just spread like wildfire on the internet. But he didn't play it right, and now he's no longer a celebrity. And I thought, well, when was he a celebrity?
Exactly.
So they were talking about there being this small window, and you have to hit it just right so you can become one of those YouTube or social media celebrities. So I'm wondering if Candace Payne, a.k.a. Chewbacca Mom, is going to be one of these new social media celebrities, or she's just going to be a mother in Texas.
Well, you know...
Does she want to be a celebrity? Who
well,
knows?
That's the thing. It comes down to desire, too, right? I mean, you know, I mean, we see it all the time in music. You know, do people... What do you want to do? Do you want to take over the world? Do you want to be on every magazine cover, or do you not? And that will determine a lot of what happens to your career. But you know, it's funny you talk about this, though. I think there's a kind of a darker side to this too, though, Jim, is that so much of what passes for celebrity and famous today is based on absolutely nothing.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like, and we go back to the Billboard Music Awards. I mean, you could clearly tell when people were not singing.
When people
didn't even put the effort in to even bother to sing lines. I mean, there were times when they'd be singing along with the track, but then they would just stop.
Yeah.
And then you'd hear the line and you'd go, what happened? And the problem I have with all of this is that what are we valuing? I mean, as a society, are we no longer valuing people who actually work and have talent and work at their talent and do things? Or are we just valuing people on the basis of if they can give us some sort of short-term gratification? And I'm sure this woman's a fine woman, and your description of it sounds to me like it was genuine and it just sort of worked. And that's great. But when you now go to the next level and you talk about people who play music or do art or write books or whatever it is, at a certain point, don't we need to value actual talent and effort?
Yes. See, I don't mind people having a moment.
No.
Having their 15 minutes. But when you have talent agents trying to build a career of someone saying, damn, Daniel. I'm like, he just said, damn, Daniel. He's not a host. He didn't go to school for that.
Right.
I did. I'm still out of work. Give me a job, baby.
Exactly. And you know, and by the way, as you well know, like all of those late night shows now, they don't look at it as a show anymore. They look at it as, can we create a moment that mm-hmm. will be viral? And,
yes.
And I know, I don't know. I've heard that there are some people in that business, particularly Conan O'Brien, who's resistant to this. Who's like, mm-hmm. dude, I'm doing a talk show here. I'm not necessarily interested in providing you a 2-minute clip that you're going to put on the internet. But mm-hmm. at the same time, that's what works. And if your 2 minutes consist of going, damn, Daniel, then you've got 2 minutes and you've got, you know, and you can make a career of it. I don't, of course, a guy made a career, a woman made a career of saying, where's the beef?
Finally, what is Lyle Presler doing for Memorial Day weekend?
Well, you know, it's always funny. Isn't it true that it always rains on Memorial Day weekend, no matter where mm-hmm. you are in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I seem to remember that from, you know, I don't really have any major plans. I mean, I'm going to go, after we finish here, I'm going to go get some more propane.
Okay.
So I'm either going to burn my house down or I'm going to cook something over okay. the weekend. How about
Hopefully
you?
It's the latter. I'm going to go out and get a bunch of balloons introduced to me by Mr. Lyle Presler.
No, you're the one who introduced those to me.
No, the first time I saw them was at your place.
The ones that, you know, the ones that you can fill like 50, 75 water balloons in 5 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you brought those.
No.
Oh.
You got those. You're the innovator.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do. I bought more, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, did
they work? They work well.
They work well. It's a good product, as seen on TV.
So that's going to do it for us. Happy Memorial Day, Lyle.
You too.
So for Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yens later.
So long.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.